This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show.
Soucy holds in for Connor Garland in the left corner. Garland on the end blocks, protecting the puck from Harris on the right wing side of Prepper. Suter with a one-timer. He scores! On the right side for Hughes. One-timer. Stick broke, but he scores anyway. Jake DeBrusk at the side of the net, able to redirect it.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
And Johnson gets it near side from Van Riemsdyk. Try to pass into the slot, broken up by Pettersson. He'll send it left wing to center for Hugh Suter, who shoots and scores! Hugh Suter's got his second of the game and 11th of the season into the open net. It's 5-2. Canucks.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks come back from a two-goal deficit to win 5-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets in their first game of a six-game homestand after a successful six-game road trip. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Vic Nizar. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. And as always, get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't the nicest evening the Canucks have had on home ice, but it was a victory, a comeback victory at that. And the way I would sum this game up, Vic, for the most part, the Canucks were the second-best team. There's no doubt. But their best players had enough big moments, and they were better than the Blue Jackets' best players. And sometimes that's all the difference that you need in an NHL game.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to describe it, right? And they created some big moments. Some of them get created for them as well. We'll chat about that moment there nearing the end of the second period. But, you know, you think about the Besser goal to kick things off. That's Quinn Hughes creating a moment, right? You think about the Suter goal. Garland and Soucy helping create a moment. And Garland's been one of their best players this year. Suter continues to impress and scoring his goals. Jake DeBrusk on really a nothing play, creating a goal out of that after a stick break as well. So very, very good signs of resilience. Being still mentally engaged in it to try to create these moments, they were second best, though, this evening.
And Randeep, like, as far as how the Canucks did start this game off, the coach talked a lot about they wanted to have a better start, right? And it's not exactly the way you wanted it to go. Canucks only had two shots in the first period.
Yeah, 17-2 in the first period, and you come out of that period down 2-0. Of course, there's probably a lot of saying, all right, that was sloppy, that was ugly. But the coach was warning about this.
Yeah.
Even after practice yesterday, he said 20 minutes, it was a little sloppy. You got to shake that rust off. And the first 20 minutes, they weren't able to do that. Sorry, I wasn't even making a Taylor Swift reference there.
You're saying they shook it off?
No. A little bit. In my peripheral vision, I saw Bick shaking his head. I was like, no, yeah. I didn't do that on purpose. But, yeah, it was sloppy in the first 20 minutes, right? How do you rebound? And in that second period, you get a more aggressive play from Elias Pettersson, where he was aggressive, taking Fabro down and tried that, you know, wraparound. And then you mentioned the play by Quinn Hughes on the Brock Besser goal as well. So, you needed to elevate there. It wasn't a perfect game even in the second period, but at the very least they were forcing the issue, and it was much needed after that first period, guys. That was I know you guys were talking about it in the intermission as well, but there was not much in that first period.
No, and this text comes in here from Antoine Langley. Columbus ran out of gas. We got lucky. I don't know if Columbus ran out of gas, to be honest, because they were the better team even after the Besser goal. They carried some of the play in that second period.
Yeah, I would say in the third, though, that there wasn't as much of a push.
I think the third kind of took the wind out of their sails because it was 2-2, and like we had this chance to kind of ice this game.
To be fair, their freshest player made the most mistakes tonight as well, which was Merzlikins, who didn't play last night. So it was that moment, though, that Sherwood goal. You could see the shoulders drop, and even after that goal, Merzlikins is angry. Zach Werenski's talking to him, and who knows what's being said in that moment of, like, I was there, you didn't need to make that play, but no doubt.
He did give him a hug, so I don't know if
he did give him a hug, but there was a little bit of maybe a conversation before that hug, so, it felt like that was a confidence denter there for Columbus, and to their credit, Vancouver took advantage of those mistakes whenever they were made.
Well, it's like being sad after a show. He's just like, hey, don't worry about that take.
Yeah, well, it's more like, what the hell's wrong with you? That I'll give him a hug afterwards. It's like when you get
so that's what happens after every game, after IMAC is done on the post-game
show? Yeah, like
show?
We usually 100%. Just, one of us, will discipline the other, and then we'll hug it out. It's like, you know, a parent, you know, they get mad at you to scold you, but then they'll sit down next to you and say, love you.
All right, Lena's going to take a photo next time this happens.
But, you know, let's talk about some individual players. You know, we talked about how obviously not the best start and whatever, but you found a way to pick up the points. And honestly, I'm at the point now, especially because, yeah, I mean, Demko backed up tonight, but he didn't play, obviously. JT Miller, there's a plan, right? Yeah. So at least he's looking like he's trending towards coming back. But Filip Hronek's out of the lineup, and you're coming back from the road trip. Not to make excuses, but I'll take the 2 points. And I think as far as, you know, the Canucks' best players coming through, again, it's just certain moments, but that's one thing we saw. That's something that Tocchet spoke about before the game when asked about Elias Pettersson. He said, yeah, I mean, obviously he can do more, but he's had a lot of moments. And I think the next step for this team is how do you turn these moments into a more sustained, regular thing and take this but build on it heading into Sunday's game against Tampa?
Yeah, have that strong game, have that strong 60 rather than having those moments, right? Yeah. The point production's been there, but you know, in that first period especially, there are plenty of breakdowns. I'm sure you've written them down, and I've written them down as well in my scribble notes here, guys. But you know, that was one of those games, first and foremost, you get the W at home, which is really important given the discussion point in the room earlier today and yesterday. The other thing is, if you're a coach and a player in that room, you know that, hey, we got that victory, but we can be a lot better than that. So there's going to be a motivating factor here to say, we got that one, but we know in a way we were lucky as well. So I know it's not a you know, it's not an oil painting, it's not a Monet, it's not anything, but in this situation, it should motivate them for Tampa Bay, because you play like this against Tampa Bay, it's going to be worse than 2-0, right?
Especially on penalty kill situations, sure, right? Like, they were sharp today. I don't know if Columbus really pushed the tempo as much as they could, but against Tampa, you're going to have Kucherov, you're going to have Gensel, you're going to have Point, you're going to have to deal with everything that they bring on the penalty kill, and they can be threatening in that spot. But Columbus tonight goes 0-5, so that's a credit to what Vancouver did, but we know the big step up is in that moment against Tampa Bay. But again, like again, there's things to chat about through this game, which we will through the course of the evening, but 2 points in this spot when you're depleted right now, and the rest of the NHL doesn't care that you've got $24 million out of the lineup, basically.
Yeah.
So you got to try to compete and try to get your points. So this is something you got to take away to build something upon it.
Also, two straight games of pretty chippy games. Minnesota had that physicality, kind of, you know, I know Tocchet mentioned about the physicality and maybe replicating a playoff game. This one also got a little chippy near the end as well. It's good to see that response.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go outside the Canucks locker room and welcome in one of the hottest goal scoring Canucks, scored his 12th goal of the season tonight, Jake DeBrusque, joining us after a comeback victory. You know, I saw somebody texting in talking about how you guys are the comeback kids. Is that kind of your motto this season, you know, coming back from deficits to win hockey games?
Yeah, I guess it's becoming a theme. It's not necessarily a theme you want to have, don't get me wrong, but you know, it shows resiliency to number one, come back in those games. And obviously you need need to stop the bleeding, and Kevin's been so great this year for us to kind of keep it manageable for us. You know, coming down 2-0 after the first, obviously we didn't like it. You know, it's two shots away, so I think that helps as well.
Well, your goal, that's just like how you drew it up, right? That's what you had planned, you and Quinn?
Oh my God, yeah, no, I knew it was going to be a greasy one here. I've actually never scored in this building, so that was my first one. That's why it was a pretty big celly. But, yeah, I just tried to honestly just try to go for a rebound on that one. I just got lucky there. It seems like pucks are just kind of finding it. So, yeah, it was to plan. Quinn was pumped about it.
9 of your 12 goals have come from the inner slot. Like, you're eating that area. Is that simply just going to that area and good things will happen?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's something that it's obviously the hardest area to go to. You know, teams are really tight defensively, obviously, depending on the opponent, but that's where I've always scored my goals. That's my game. That's my MO, is getting that area and kind of getting some greasy ones here and there and playing with speed off the rush. And, you know, when I'm playing well, it seems that pucks find me. And the guys have done a great job of, number one, putting pucks there for me. And, you know, I'm just kind of getting used to how everyone plays, and it seems like it's been clicking. But that's my MO, is getting to that paint. And, you know, that's where the goals are scored.
Jake, you referenced it, your first goal here in this building in front of these fans. Is that something that's important, right? You've been so successful so far this year, 11 goals, albeit all on the road. But is that something just to get the one in front of the home fans to feel like, all right, now I'm here?
Yeah, you know, and honestly, it's something that you kind of brush off, you know, when people ask you and things like that. But, you know, it's a mental thing. You know, it's one of those things where it's almost like a weird block that just kind of happens over the years. And it hasn't happened really in any other building. I think I have one more to go. But, you know, it's one of those things where obviously it being home, you know, I wanted it way earlier. You know, it was one of those things where I was really disappointed, to be honest with you. And it was just nice to kind of get the relief out of the way. You know, it's one of those things where obviously it was to put us up two, and kind of a greasy one, but hopefully there's a lot more to come. You know, usually that's kind of what happens in the
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's one of those things too. When you first came with the team and you didn't score in the first, was the 7, 8, 9 games, but then you get going now. And one of the things that we talked about in training camp as well was getting a chance to play alongside Pettersson. You guys building some chemistry. Didn't go the way you guys wanted the first 9 or 10 games of the season. But how do you feel about you guys 5-on-5 and the game coming along for you guys in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, tonight was kind of a little bit of a grind kind of game. You know, we didn't really have, you know, our best as a line. I think we got better as the game went on. I think we got some chances. But, you know, I think even as a team, they were kind of coming at us pretty hard. So we were just trying to play simple. But in terms of playing with Petey, it's a pleasure. You know, obviously he's such a skilled player. He's going to find you in certain spots. And he drags so many people to him in the defensive zone. So, you know, I like to kind of just stand in front, but there's areas where I can start moving and get pucks with time and space. And then obviously with Brock, he's a special player as well. So I'm really lucky to be on the line. Obviously I want to do everything I can to stay. That's what I always, you know, implement every game. But I think the chemistry, even between us three, every game is, you know, important. You know, even games like tonight, for example, where it doesn't really go our way, but we still kind of chip in. That's a sign of a great line.
What's working here recently on the power play? It's clicking at 30% here in the past 15 games, and it's just been just solid throughout here. What's changed for it?
Yeah, we're getting some bounces. You know, I to be honest with you, I think it starts off with just how we attack the zone. You know, obviously with entries and things like that. But Quinn's been unbelievable up top. You know, he drags so many people to him, and he still finds ways to get that shot through. Petey. You know, we haven't gotten Petey as loose as we necessarily want to. Teams are taking him away, so it gives us 3-on-2s in other areas. And obviously being on this team, there's lots of dangerous players, and me being in front, I'm just kind of trying to screen and trying to time when the pucks are coming, and it seems that it's been working. And you know, it's one of those things where power plays are sometimes you just need one to kind of get going, and then you kind of go on a roll. So I was able to join them, I guess, a couple games ago, and it's been a pleasure.
Well, the coach mentioned, especially when Quinn has a top puck up top, and especially against the diamond formations, if you guys have a 2-on-1 down low, he wants them to shoot the puck, and you guys can outman. And considering you're really comfortable playing in front of the net, Besser can do it well too, and even Connor Garland, like the three of you guys being able to kind of go in and out, does that create like a bit more havoc and different looks for the PKers?
Yeah, I think so. I think you don't want to be stagnant, but at the same point, if there's a look that you want, you kind of have to be in your positions and be ready for it. And like you said, with a diamond, obviously. Oh, thank you. You know, it's a hard kill to kind of defend. It takes away the flanks, but it does leave a 2-on-1 down low if you kind of break it down, or a bumper shot. So obviously with Brock's shot, that takes a lot of attention. So it kind of gives me a little more room to operate. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think we can actually take more advantage of it as you make tweaks and things like that. They're going to start taking certain things away. They're going to have to. And that's what the fun part about the power play is. You know, it's one of those things where you just make little tweaks. But anytime there's a 2-on-1 down low, I love it. I'm not going to lie.
Hey, Jake, it's always a pleasure chatting with you, man. Great game tonight. Best of luck on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Thank you. Cheers.
That is Canucks forward Jake DeBrusque after scoring his 12th goal of the season, helping the Canucks win tonight.
Yeah, and he's been so confident as well. The 11 goals on the road here, he gets the first one. And even, you know, after practice or on the game day skate, there was not sure why I haven't scored, but it'll happen. You can say that only so many times. Great to see him actually score that goal. Has a little bit of an extra celly as well. He was a little motivated after that one, but that was a greasy goal. That was one where he had to, you know, stick on the ice. Good for him to complete that one, but this was a weird game tonight,
guys.
It
absolutely encapsulated the whole evening.
This game was drunk. I'm saying it.
It really was. It really was. Like, it's an NHL-sanctioned game, but none of it really made sense. Like, honestly, even the officiating in both directions, like, it was a mess throughout the whole course of the evening. And, like, the way Columbus played in the first period, I think, all right, that's a fired-up team, but they looked totally different in the final 20 than they did in the first 20. And then the Canucks, just these weird moments, Merzlikins goes out for a skate. Like, again, I'm still completely baffled of what he was reading on that play. But, yeah, this game was bizarre.
The 2-2 goal is one thing, but even that 3-2 Suter goal, like, it goes straight through him on that one, which is a couple of moments in this game where you're looking at the Columbus goaltender and saying, you know, in certain nights where your goaltender can give you confidence or take it away, yeah, he did the latter. Like, they did the hard work, and they forced the issue with Vancouver. And, yeah, Vancouver didn't play their A game in the first period, far from it, but you get the lead, and then those two mistakes, really, especially that Sherwood one, change the game. But this was a strange game, boys.
It was. It really was a bit of an odd game, right? And I think you know, to the point that Jake made, and somebody texted in and said he sounds like a true professional, sounds like a coach already with how he describes plays, and that's the thing you stands out as soon as the first time you talk to DeBrusk. Like, yeah. He's really clear with how he gets across his thoughts about how the game gets played. But I think when you look at what the Canucks were able to do and him being able to get the score of the goal here tonight, he talked about Kevin Lankinen. They went down 2-0. It could have been worse, right? And if you were down 3 or 4 in the first, you don't have a chance to come back into this game. So it comes back to a common denominator. As much as we were talking about the team fighting back, you have to have a goalie that lets you fight back. And Kevin Lankinen has allowed them to do that, and that was him again here tonight.
Yeah, through 40 minutes, you know, I don't have that handy, but the high dangers were heavily skewed in the favor of Columbus. The way that they were generating chances, in the end, he gets 30 saves on 32 shots, guys, and a bunch of chances.
9-4 high dangers.
9-4 through 40. And in tight, there was a number of opportunities where he had to battle. Like, there was a consistent battle in that opening 20 minutes where there was room down low. There was room in tight where they were getting paths to the net, whether it was Severson early on in the game on the right-hand side, and he inches closer. And what did the Canucks do? They collapsed. Lankinen's got to make that save. There are a number of other moments. So, absolutely, guys. At the end of that period, it could have been 3 or 4, zip. It could have been one of those terrible first period, but your goaltender keeps you in it. He gives you confidence. Meanwhile, the guy on the other side, he kind of undercut his team at the knees on that one, on that 2-2 goal. So, yeah, Kevin Lankinen, every time, and it's one of those things, we select the player of the game during the broadcast. If Kevin Lankinen's not number one, he's number two in almost every single game. That speaks to the consistency of his play this year. And if Thatcher Demko can, you know, get some games, slowly build some confidence, you're looking at a situation you're confident in both of these guys. So I think, you know, with Lankinen, just a fantastic, fantastic effort yet again.
I thought he got a bit wide on the Severson goal.
Yeah.
We got a great vantage point from at our angle. Like, even as Severson was skating, it's like, oh, that far post looks open.
Yeah.
And he ends up picking that spot with a 73-mile-an-hour slap shot. But look, how do you respond, right? And there's a chances at the end of that period. Fantilli's got a chance in the slot. There's a play right near the end on the left flank that he makes a save, and just continue to grow into the game. And that's the thing. Like, okay, that second goal went in. Now you got to shut the door, right? Like,
yeah.
You have to give your team the chance, and it speaks to what happened this evening. Like, resilience to me is the term that's going to come out of it, and Lankinen showcased some the rest of the way.
And even when he gives up goals, there aren't many softies. You mentioned that play, right, on the Severson goal to make it 2-0. He probably can play the angle better, but it's a breakaway, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Like, that when you get to a point like that, and that's where those are the goals you're giving up. You're not giving up the types of goals that makes the bench sag, and I think that is a big point too. For how he's able to at least keep the guy still believing he's going to make the next save.
For sure, and you want to fight for that guy the next time around where you're saying, okay, that battle in front of the net, I got to be stronger on my skates. I got to be stronger with my stick. I got to battle for that space and make sure that you're not hanging him out to dry. And that's really the difference between a guy that you can rely on every single night versus a backup goaltender. And Kevin Lankinen this year is starting to show not only the Vancouver Canucks but the rest of the league, the Four Nations Faceoff, you name it, that he's a guy that can be relied on, guys. So I think everybody, and to your point, Bick, the Damon Severson goal, a little bit more room on that right-hand side, but he rebounds, and that's what you need in games like this.
Randeep, great stuff as always, man. Always a pleasure. Enjoy tomorrow on Hockey Night in Punjabi, and we'll see you on Sunday afternoon when the Canucks host the Tampa Bay Lightning.
All right. 1 p.m. I can do. 9:30, I don't know if I can do that again, but we're good, boys. Have a good night.
You got it. That is Randeep Janda, and that is your game review brought to you by BC Honda Dealers. Love a good save, then you'll love the all-new, all-electric Honda Prologue EV. Score up to $10,000 in combined rebates. Visit bchonda.ca. A lot of reaction on our text inbox, 650-650. We are going to go to the phone boards coming up in just a moment. This text message here says, just listening to Jake speak about the game lets you know he's a true professional, sounds like a coach. And somebody else says, he sounds like a seasoned broadcaster already. Great on the radio. He sounds like an analyst. Great voice, great content. That is Night Street Mike. And somebody else said, he sounds like my brother. He says, Sat, he sounds like you, like your brother or something. Text message unsigned. I've heard that from somebody. I'm not sure I get that, but I don't listen
I don't
to
get
myself.
That one. Yeah.
Bick doesn't get it either. I'm not quite sure. I've heard it before. Figured we, you know.
He sounds way better than you.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
Yeah, that's the difference, right?
Yeah, so. And he's far more talented as well. I mean, I just hope he doesn't want to be a broadcaster afterwards.
Oh, man.
All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. Do you have a couple you want to read here before we go to the phone boards?
KG, sleepy first. Felt like that offensive push by Petey in the second was where the team got going. Finished strong. Hughes was a force. Can't wait till Dak gets going. But he won't be my next prediction. Home win. It's huge. There you go.
Yeah, it's a big win for the Canucks here tonight, even though it was a bit of a slow start. Let's go to the phone boards, and let's start things off in Vancouver, where we have Lawrence on the line. Lawrence, thanks for calling in. Now, what are your thoughts here after a 5-2 Canucks win coming back from two goals down?
Oh, hey, boys, what a good win tonight, eh? I just wanted to call you and talk about some of the X's and O's that I've been noticing, more specifically about the lack of shots, and, I mean, you know, watching the game pretty carefully, I think that the root of it was really the transition game. I don't know if you would agree, but we were kind of brutal through the neutral zone. Our passing, like, I would love to see what our passing percentage was. And our zone entry was just brutal. Everything turned into dump and chases. And then turnovers, which really prevented our shots. But, you know, when we were skating the space and we got into the zone, everything looked fine. But even then, when we got into the zone in the first two periods, I think we got kept off the shot clock because, you know, we were slow. We gave the defenders a chance to set up. But in the third period, when they adjusted with quick passes and they created chances and quick shots, that's when they started producing. And I think that's going to be their formula. I mean, like, you can't have games against better teams where you're playing like we did in the first and second period. Anyways, I'd love to know your thoughts. Thanks for picking up my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in. That's Lawrence calling in from Vancouver. And I don't disagree. Like, tonight they had a real heck of a time connecting, playing the offensive zone. For the first at least, you know, 30 minutes of this game, essentially, up until...
You can probably go, like, 45 minutes.
45. Well, I mean, so where the time they got things going was right before the first goal. It was after the Canucks killed a penalty. It was right when Pettersson came back on the ice. They collapsed in front. They blocked a shot. They got the puck back. Pettersson created that rush chance, got it to Joshua, who tried to find Garland. They got an offensive zone face-off. They win the face-off. Pettersson has a wraparound chance, get another face-off, win that face-off, and that leads to the Hughes play to find Besser to make it 1-0. That was the first sequence in the entire game where they connected play a little bit and actually had zone time and had the puck and got two offensive zone face-off off of the same rush play. And it wasn't a coincidence they scored, but that was the first time all game, up until the first goal they scored, Bick, that they had any real success in the offensive zone. So I understand the point Lawrence is making about how little success they had offensively for much of the game.
But just in general, like, if you think about that goal, right, it comes off the faceoff.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like in play, in transition. So it like everything that Lawrence says, like, I'm not going to dispute it because he's right. He's absolutely right. Like, they struggled through the neutral zone today. Mm-hmm. They got stymied through the neutral zone. And to be honest, like, their forecheck wasn't going for most of the night. And so Columbus had easy access out of the zone as well to generate speed, probably earmarked by the Severson goal. But, like, until, like, Carson Soucy kind of came down that wall and poked that puck down to Garland, and he works through some traffic and through some contact to get that puck to Pugh Suter. Like, it was a struggle throughout this evening to generate much.
Yeah, and I again, like, we hear it often with the coaching staff. Are they simplifying things too much? Are they dumbing things down too much? And you hear Tockett speak, and we'll hear his thoughts here post-game coming up in a bit. He always talks about holding on to pucks more, too, and making plays, and he wants them to generate more off the rush. It's more about, are they capable of executing that? Now, they have shown they are. Tonight was a real struggle, and I'm not sure how much of tonight we can take and say, hey, this is systemic, or how much of it you kind of throw out the window. I'm not quite sure yet. I got to rewatch this game, Bick, to really come away with, like, what was this game? Because it was a really odd, strange hockey game.
It was bizarre.
There was not much going on for them, and they had some moments where they scored goals. That's essentially how
it broke
down.
Even the moment of power play, which, by the way, also comes off a face-off, right? Man, you can't replicate a guy breaking his stick and a puck along the ice tipping perfectly in the five hole. So it's again, that's why I say, like, the X's and O's stuff that Lawrence is asking about, like, I don't know what you build upon and extract out of this game, because you're right, Lawrence. Like, absolutely. Like, they had lack of shots. Like, there was a moment, like, that Joshua moment.
Had two in the first period.
Yeah, that Joshua moment that you talk about. It's a nice play, right? It's like, Pettersson hits you cross slot. Just take the shot.
Yeah.
I get like there's a tap in at the back door, but you're giving defenders more time to get back into the play when you make that pass. You've already done the difficult bit of getting a cross slot pass 3-on-2. Just take that shot. Sherwood had a chance later, which they connected on the pass, and Merzlikins make a good save. But like the way Sherwood twists his body, it's like just be aggressive. Like your body language dictates you're going to pass. You're giving up good opportunities. Even Bluger on the empty net.
Yeah.
Like, he passes up an empty net chance. Now, Horinsky gets back into it.
Well, I was doing an intermission panel with Landon, and, you know, before we went on air, he's like, if I had to, I would just shoot it at his legs. Yeah. I'm going to break your legs if you want to get in front of this one. Like, I'm going to hammer this one. I mean, if he was Teddy Bluger, right? But there is too much.
Like, that's another play. It's like they do pass up opportunities, and it can be a bit maddening.
They are a bit too deferential when they have the puck sometimes. And the guy that's not is Quinn Hughes, and he's really been the engine for this team offensively and defensively. Another big game from him, and we'll get to that a bit more. Let's take one more phone call before we hit the break, and let's go to Kingsway, where our friend PK is on the line. PK, what's going on, buddy? What do you have for us tonight?
All right, good. Hey, thanks for taking my call, boys, fellas. I was on point, right, like super early for this one. I thought for sure Swifty was doing the anthem. Where was she? Right? Canucks at home, basically invisible. Like Lawrence said, nothing was taped to tape. Their play looked uncoordinated. Like, is stealing a game at home a thing versus a non-playoff team? Like, we got a dichotomous relationship or whatever with, like, the hockey gods right now. Like, you guys see Kent Johnson miss the open cage in the first shift?
Yeah.
Like, who names their kid Kent? Okay. All right. Merzlikins with the Artie Shelovs game 5 impression. Nice try, bud. Sick Cho to save later, though. But, man, that interception by Teddy Kemi, this to Sherwood, sure, Twine, right? That was fun to watch. All right. Okay, sick pass by Joshua Tree to Dehar Pylon out of the box, right? Clearly trying to go 7-hole, but went right off the blocker. We're squeaking. Didn't even have to move. Hey, so what's the story with the holes, boys? I mean, like, we all know how to shoot 5-hole, right? Under the arm is definitely a hole, right? 2 arms, 2 holes. I've heard 7-hole, 9-hole. Never 3-hole, though. Like, how many holes are there? Like, this might be the most valuable information that has ever been clearly communicated to the hockey community.
Yeah.
Right? Bic? Yeah. Right? Sat? Like, do you guys know the hole?
All right.
7-hole blocker side elbow? Like, Pew Pew's Gino. You guys see that one? That was 7-hole, right? Or, like, 9-hole? Definitely wasn't 5-hole. Enlighten us about the holes, boys.
Yeah, we will.
Please.
Hey, PK, thanks for the phone call. You know what? We'll get to the holes he's speaking about in a little bit here. We'll try to address them all as the show goes on. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. Canucks come back from a 2-goal deficit to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets 5-2 on home ice, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Like Kubota, do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. The head coach is next on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast and don't miss an episode. This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks win the faceoff. Besser has it left circle to the right side for Hughes. One-timer, stick broke, but he scores anyway. And I think that might have been Jake DeBrusk at the side of the net, able to redirect it. The Canucks extend their streak of power play goals to 4 games. Jake DeBrusk has his first goal as a member of the Canucks at Rogers Arena, and it's 4-2 Vancouver.
Officially welcome to Vancouver, Jake DeBrusk.
You know, that's something that it's obviously the hardest area to go to. You know, teams are really tight defensively, obviously, depending on the opponent, but that's where I've always scored my goals. That's my game. That's my MO, is getting that area and kind of getting some greasy ones here and there and playing with speed off the rush. And, you know, when I'm playing well, it seems that pucks find me, and the guys have done a great job of, number one, putting pucks there for me, and, you know, I'm just kind of getting used to how everyone plays, and it seems like it's been clicking, but that's my MO, is getting to that paint, and, you know, that's where the goals are scored.
Canucks forward Jake DeBrusk, who joined us here on the post-game show after a 5-2 Canucks win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. DeBrusk scored his 12th goal of the season, his first goal in front of the home fans here at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central post-game show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. And always get your thoughts in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone call. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650 or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. It's Sat and Bick on Sportsnet 650. We are going to get to the head coach as soon as that audio becomes available to us. And the Canucks, considering they came off a 4-1-1 road trip, the expectation was that they would, you know, carry that over at least to this homestand, or at least they need to, considering they've had so much trouble winning on home ice. So I was a bit, I wouldn't say nervous about this game. One of the things we talked about on the pregame show was, as much as Columbus is a team that's playing three games of four nights, they're young, they got a lot of enthusiasm, they play fast.
They play hard, man. Dean Evason teams do not play light.
You nailed it. Honestly, I have a lot of respect for Dean Evason and the way he coaches. And I think this Columbus Blue Jackets team is everything that people thought Ottawa would be as far as their overall play. And people look at their underlying numbers like, oh, Ottawa should be good. And you watch them, you're like, they just make
that
dumb mistake after dumb mistake. And you can see how they unravel. This team doesn't unravel, really. Like they were tired in the third, as you would expect, playing the second of a back-to-back. But for a young hockey team, they play a pretty clean, aggressive style. And there is a lot of trust being put on these young guys. You can see that they're making the most of it. They play with a lot of enthusiasm. And you see Ken Johnson went from being a player who was really struggling. How dangerous did he look tonight?
The thing I wanted to shout out is defensively he put in some work too, right? Like fantastic angles through the neutral zone, just cutting off potential passes. And, you know, not that I'm watching every Columbus Blue Jackets game, but, you know, when they pop by for a visit once a year, and you kind of see the growth of a bunch of players, it really stood out tonight that it felt like, okay, this team's actually on a track to actually get better, right? We've seen Eastern teams pop in here once a year. Like, they look very similar. And, you know, we've sat here through Buffalo and Ottawa and Montreal. It's like, this is the year they pop through and they break through. And it's like, I don't know, man. I don't see it. I'm interested to watch Columbus over the next, you know, 18 months here, because I felt like Ken Johnson felt like a totally different player. Voronkov looked like he, you know, has taken a big step, and they got some bodies, man. Like, just like I mean by sizable players. Like, Voronkov's 6'5", Marchenko's 6'3". He looked dangerous tonight. Fantilli, I thought, was probably the best player on the ice outside of Quinn Hughes.
Didn't get a point, but you notice a play in the third, the way he's able to pick up speed in the hands he has.
Just all through the, just the way he kind of darts around the ice, right? Again, for a bigger body, he's 6'2", probably more than two. He's listed at 199, but he looks bigger than that. He moves, man. And so it's coming for the Blue Jackets at some point. Throw in Werenski, who you just hope for health, right? Fabro looked nice tonight. Severson had moments tonight. They got something coming at some point.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they're an exciting group of players, and they're playing super hard for their head coach. And they were impressive, especially – and so we talked about it on the pregame show that this is a team that the first 10, 15 minutes – expect them to play pretty hard. And you have to kind of weather that a little bit. And can the Canucks find their game as it goes on? And I was disappointed in the fact that the Canucks couldn't find their game really up until, I mean, they got the first goal, the 2-1 goal to bring it close. But I was expecting this Columbus team to be a bit of a tough test. I know people look at it and said, hey, they should win this hockey game. But they proved that this wasn't going to be an easy one. But it was a big win to get nonetheless, because the rest of this homestand, it's not going to be an easy one, especially having an early game. We talk about the starts being an issue. Well, you can't let it be an issue when you have a 1 o'clock start on Sunday. So I just hope this gets them to that point where they can actually get off to a good start here on home ice.
Certainly. Oh, and I didn't even mention Cole Sillinger. Like, he made his unreal pass on the goal, and then he had this deceptive shot in the third period where he kind of no-look shot, and it caught Lankinen by surprise. He was able to steer it away, though. But, yeah, like, that was an impressive game. We had a text earlier here, 650-650. I think it was from Sean. Apologies if it wasn't. But he asked, you know, because Sillinger's name has been in the rumor mill, and also Matthew Olivier, just what we thought about their game. Like, Sillinger looked really nice.
Yeah, he did. He had a real strong game. And we'll break the goals down, and we'll talk about how he set up the first goal to Matthew Olivier to make it 1-0, and how the rest of the game kind of unfolded. A lot of reaction on text inbox, 650-650. Owen and Burnaby says, at times, Fantilli looked absolutely fantastic. Just has to find that finish, but boy, does he skate well. Robin Victoria says, Soucy and Bester look like their game is back. Joshua's still looking for a foot or two. He looks a bit behind. That's Robin Victoria. We'll talk more about Joshua, but I did think Soucy followed up a pretty good game, a really good game against Minnesota, but with a pretty solid one. He had a really nice shot block, had a couple of nice moments defensively in how he moved the puck out of his own zone. It really looks like his game is coming around.
And it happened so fast,
yeah.
Right? Like, we're not talking that long ago of, like, man.
What's going on?
Does he need to be scratched? And last game, he was the driving force, and that was, like, a spectacular game. This felt like a far more regular Carson Soucy game that we saw last year.
Just steady.
Steady. Just did the job in a key moment, you know, came out sliding to block a shot there in the second period. Like, that was huge there on a shot from Werenski after Garland kind of slipped and didn't get the puck out of the zone. But Soucy was in the right spot. Like, he just looked like himself all over again.
Yeah, and this is now four games. He's only been on the ice for one goal in these last four games.
Yeah. Awesome.
You know, and I think that is a real testament to how he's played. All right, we'll get to more of your texts coming up in a moment, but let's take another phone call. Let's go to Surrey, where we have Neil on the line. Neil, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here tonight?
Oh, hey, boys. How are you doing tonight?
We're doing well, man. How are you?
Not too bad. I just wanted to quickly talk about, Columbus played last night in Edmonton, right? Mm-hmm. And we always hear from the players of the Canucks of game-by-game mentality. What do you guys think of maybe, I mean, I know three shots in the period was not ideal, but maybe the Canucks were told tonight, you know, to absorb the pressure and attack them when they're tired because, you know, it's a tired team coming from Edmonton. And I'll just leave it there. Thanks, boys.
Hey, thanks for the phone call. So essentially, Neil is suggesting, was it a bit of a rope-a-dope where absorb their hit and then push them back? I doubt it because the coach spoke a lot about getting off to a better start, and even DeBrusk, we had him on, spoke about it, didn't like their start. I get what Neil's getting at, and we are going to get to the coach in a moment, and I'm sure he'll address the start. I get playing possum sometimes, but I don't think they wanted to invite pressure necessarily as a game plan.
I don't know if they've earned that right to just be like, hey, we'll find our game through the course of it right now. Like, they have to find a way to be better early in games, and let alone on home ice, because there was a lot of vitriol coming into the inbox here, and a lot of people texting us like, what's going on? This is another bad home game. It mirrored the Islanders game for the first 20 minutes.
Yeah, there two shots in the first wasn't great, right? And even the shots, like, to me, okay, fine, you didn't generate anything. I don't mind if you don't generate, if you don't give anything up. Like, I can live with that, but you gave up a lot.
You were down two, and it should have been four, right? Like, we heard about the Kent Johnson chance, and there was other chances.
Did Lankinen get a piece of that, Kent? It looked like Lankinen got a blocker on it, the first chance of the game. When I saw it on the replay.
I just thought he missed the empty net. If I haven't looked at a replay.
I saw a replay since. Okay. I was watching it with IMAC. I think he got a blocker on it.
Then
I think Lankinen
incredible.
Made that save.
Yeah,
I think Lankinen
but nevertheless, it's like he still had a fantastic
I mean, incredible. No, 100%. I agree with you. I'm just saying I thought it was a save. All right, nonetheless, we'll get to more of your reaction coming up after 5-2 Canucks win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. And let's go and get the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. And here is Rick talking at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Ninth comeback win of the year. How important was the resilience shown in the second 40 minutes after the way the first period went?
Yeah, I mean, you're happy, scrappy, like I said, but, you know, tough first period. I think we got to start learning. If we don't have our legs, I mean, whatever, coming back. They played 3-4, so you can't use that excuse. I just thought that we just didn't manage the game. A lot of turnovers. You can't do that when you're not, I don't know, so if you're ready, we just had to get, that wasn't the game plan the first period. So good that we come out of it, but, you know, you can't do that because it's tough to come back in this league. So, you know, kudos to the guys coming back, some key guys making some good plays but I think that first period we got to learn from it. It's
We've asked you about him so much, but how about Kevin and the performance that he put forth tonight to hold you guys in it when the thing was tilted against you in the first?
Yeah, I mean, we're down 2-0, and he just keeps battling. I mean, how can you not love the kid? He just battled and battled, you know, gave us a chance. Get that goal, every kind of breathed a little bit, so it kind of helped us.
You mentioned just your players making key plays, and that's what changed the game. What is it about your players making the change? Like, what changes did you see after the first period kind of that really led you guys to put up five straight in a row there?
Well, I think the first five and the second – I think we had a couple of good forecheck and shit. We held pucks. We couldn't hold a puck in the first. We lost every battle, but we started to win some battles. Got back in the game, and then we started turning the puck over again in the second. So, I mean, there's just pockets of it. Obviously, we got to get better at. But I think really it's coming up with managing the puck, and then we won some battles. That's how we kind of got back in the game. Obviously, you know, get that power play goal helps too.
Rick, you talked about how hard it is to come back in this league. Yeah. What is it about this specific group and what they've been through that's allowed them to keep mounting these comebacks?
Yeah, I thought we were a good team last year at that. I you know, it's honestly, it's you got to credit them because they don't give up. Team's getting some adversity hit this year. You know, there's a bunch of stories that have hit us, and you know, we're dealing with it in a good way. I thought how can I love the fans for yelling JT out there? That was pretty cool. I thought that was awesome. So, thanks to the fans for that.
And nice to see DeBrusk score his first in this building.
Yeah, well, he's scoring every game now. You know, a lot of confidence scoring around that paint. You know, say what you want. When you're, you know, I don't care if it's a fluke goal or not. He's got it, puts a stick on it. But he's getting those. I don't know. He's probably got seven of those goals around the paint, and that's a good sign. You know, obviously he's got a great shot. He can fly down the wing. But when you get a guy like that can score in the paint, best is the same thing. You know, they score in that area. You know, it's contagious.
We saw Besser and Demko hugging in just warm-ups alone, and then, of course, Demko was on the bench. Yeah. But can you feel that positivity around the room with him even just being there suited up?
Yeah, like I said to you guys this morning, this guy's worked his butt off. A lot of lonely days by himself with trainers. Seeing him out there, it's great. I mean, you know, we start getting some people back here, but, you know, Denver's a guy that, I mean, you know, he's just going to add so much. And obviously the Lynx is playing pretty solid group of goaltenders we got.
Yeah, with that, does it give you the opportunity to maybe ease Demko back in and not have to give him a heavy workload given how Kevin's playing?
Yeah, of course. You know, we'll see how here the next day or two. But, you know, you got to pick and choose. You know, we got to, you know, you got to let Denver get in there. But, you know, he's not going to, can't play the hell of the guy. So we'll manage him.
What are you seeing from your pairs? You know, it seems like Soucy has settled in a bit. I know everybody kind of looked a little bit shaky in the first period, but after that, do you get a sense that there's some comfort building?
I thought Soucy was probably, like, there wasn't so many guys that positive in the first. I thought Soucy was one of them. I think in the last four or five games he's settled. You know, he's playing really well, I got to admit. You know, obviously Hughes is always Hughes. He's just, you know, he's all world. But I thought that Soucy kind of settled everybody down. When we were a little bit jittery.
I stopped by Dean Evason, and he was talking about how frustrated he was about how his team managed the puck as the game went along, which sounds like the opposite of your kind of story. Like, your team got better at that. Is that how you saw it from your perspective?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's a good rush team. You know, we're still trying to learn how to play off the rush, be calculated. I just think we're still not understanding when to make plays and when not. We want to make plays, but I feel like when we don't have any speed, we're trying to make plays, and that's a killer if you're off the rush. If you got no speed and they got numbers, you got to play behind them. The puck has to go behind. You got to play. You know, that's when we start getting the puck, you know, under the hash marks. I thought we started, you know, our game came. That's what we're going to have to do, especially with, you know, the guys we have in the lineup. We got to play a certain way. And we got to give him credit, though. Like I said, we've been scrappy the last four or five, six games, and we got to cut out some of these periods. You know, you can't be outshot 17-2. I mean, that's a tough one for me. But like I said, got to give guys credit coming back.
And then there's your PK. I mean, big performance from them tonight. Are they getting to where you want them to be?
Yeah, I think Footy's done a nice job. You know, I think Teddy and Blues Teddy and Suits have done a nice job. They're taking the lion's share of it. But yeah, no, we you know, the PK's been pretty good this year. You know, it's won us some games or kept us in games too.
Suter has been like a Swiss Army knife for you in terms of goal scoring. He's consistently scored 14, 15 goals in his career. He's already up to 11 this year. Are you seeing something different with how he gets open for chances and how he finishes?
He's worked on his shot, especially at the start of the year. I remember, I don't know if I had him on the – I don't know what line I had him on, and I remember he came in. He wasn't even complaining. He just said, hey, can you you know, what can I do to get better? And, you know, we talked about his practice. He was staying on shooting a lot of pucks. I feel that's really helped him because he's, you know, I think his shot has really improved from last year. And it's off quicker. Obviously, playing with Gars helps too. I mean, Gars gave him a beautiful setup. So, yeah. But, yeah, he's making the most of his time, suits. He's, you know, and, you know, have him out there last minute, you know, as a winger. So, he, you know, you're right, Swiss Army knife.
How important has it been to have him contribute as a center in the top six with JT away from the team?
Well, it's huge. You know, when Millsy's out, it's, you know, it gets watered down. But, you know, I thought Teddy played good tonight. You know, Teddy was good at the suits. You know, PD was, had some moments good. You know, we got, you know, we got Millsy back. That's going to really bolster our lineup and our faceoffs. You know, I think that's something we got to work on. And when Millsy comes back, that'll help us.
Rick, in the past, you've talked about how when maybe there hasn't been a strong period, you haven't gone in the room and just let the leaders talk and the whole team talk. Was today you go in the room and talk, or was it leave the players to sort it out?
Yeah, no, it was Huggy. Like, I went in there and I could tell Huggy had it. I didn't. They didn't need me to scream and yell. Like, they had it. So, you know, there's a time and place for that. But I knew right now when I looked, when he looked at me, it was like, hey, we got it. So that's a good thing from my captain, our captain.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. And from vision to reality, Tile Town has everything you need for your tiling project. See them today in Victoria, Richmond, Langley, and online at mytiletown.ca. And that is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet. And at the end, speaking about Quinn Hughes, who he said after the first just kind of looked at talk and said, we got this in the room. This, we'll handle this. You don't need to go out and read the riot act to the players, and said that he really appreciates that from the captain. And we had a call right before we went to coach from Neil, who wondered if the game plan was to do a bit of a rope-a-dope against the Columbus Blue Jackets, and pretty much said that was not the game plan, how they played in the first, and really spoke about how they have to learn from that first period and they can't keep starting games like that. And really gave credit to how scrappy they've been, but kept repeating that we can't start games like this.
That was actually a really informative post-game presser because, you know, we get a lot of thoughts of like, hey, like, what's Tocchet thinking in these moments? And, you know, we've been wondering about what this rush evolution is going to be for this team. And he kind of went out of his way to point out, it's like, hey, that's a good rush team over there. And we're still learning to understand when we can make plays in these spots, and just illuminating that the speed element of when we're not skating, we're trying to do too much to try to create it. So that's a good little insight into Rick Tocchet hockey there.
Yeah, and also, you know, for a lot of people wondering, why aren't they shooting? Why aren't they not getting more shots? Why are they not generating more chances? It's clear they're not executing on what they're trying to accomplish. And he did cite that they're getting outshot, and they can't get outshot this much. But again, credit to coming back. And it's one of those games where it's a bit of both. You're proud of the team coming back from a deficit and winning the game, but you're also disappointed about certain things. But certainly something you can work on and get better on. And we spoke about Carson Soucy, how good he's been. Mm-hmm. And he spoke about him too, Bick, and how the last four or five games. And mentioned how he settled the guys down when they were a bit jittery. And this goes back to last year where his presence on the bench was something that the coach spoke about, but also other players when you asked him about it, that he had a real calm sense about him. No matter what's going on, he's pretty cool. He's always laughing. He's kind of chatting. And it's good to see that confidence back. Someone texted in, he's back smiling on the ice again. And it's a small thing, but it shows you that when he's at his best, there are other elements that he brings to the team.
Well, just on the night, though, when, especially in the early going, like, Desharnais had a problem kind of taking good angles to the puck. Brännström had a couple icings where just, you know, puzzling decisions. Juulsen had a couple of moments. Myers, we know, can sometimes be an adventure with the puck. But, you know, the person I thought in the first 30-some-odd minutes, who I didn't even take notes, be like, oh, turn over there, Carson Soucy. Didn't show up in that disregard. And so if you're looking for that steadiness that we're just chatting about it, and there's Rick Tocchet saying, like, yeah, he was a settling factor so far this evening. And, you know, we've talked about, like, sometimes he's playing in disadvantageous spots here where it's a lot of defensive zone starts and not a lot of offensive time. Yeah, tonight, three offensive zone faceoffs at 5-on-5, 6 in the neutral zone, 6 in the defensive zone. It's tough assignments for Carson Soucy, but making the best of it.
Absolutely, and that's what you want to see from him. And especially with Filip Hronek being out, they needed somebody to step up. And the other part of it is they've needed him to be that clean, because that Desharnais-Branstrom pair has been getting absolutely ventilated the last few games, right? We're talking about Desharnais has been on the ice now for 7 goals against, I think, the last 4 games. And that's, you know, that starts adding up, and it gets to a point where, can you have this guy out there repeatedly? I know he's been good on the PK, but 5-on-5, he's really struggled. So could you imagine right now if Soucy was struggling, they probably wouldn't be, you know, 5-1-1 in their last 7.
No, not at all. Right, and just think of the burden that would go on Quinn Hughes in that stage, because he's had 30-minute nights here.
Yeah,
Quinn Hughes, albeit it going to overtime, and just seeing 26-25, you're like, all right, that's a little bit less for Quinn Hughes, even if it's 26, which is still quite a bit. But you know, traditionally, if they're full health, you know, it trends towards 24, 23. So it's still a lot of minutes, but you need another reliable guy on the back end right now. And Carson Soucy, 22-21 for him today, just ahead of Tyler Myers at 21-20. But as you mentioned, Desharnais, so we bring his up, 18-35 tonight. Noah Juulsen, 15-43. And Eric Branstrom, 14-22.
Yeah, Branstrom, the low minute man. And obviously, isn't really featuring a ton on the PK. Did play a little bit on the power play, but very briefly, only 9 seconds. It's like very briefly.
Changeover, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much it. So obviously a big difference as far as special teams time goes. But nonetheless, he was the low man, even 5-on-5. So we'll see what happens if and when Derek Forbort is ready to return on this homestand, hopefully. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox. We'll get to more of your thoughts, and we'll get to more analysis. Plus, we'll hear from more Canucks players, and Ian McIntyre is going to join us. We'll break down all the goals that happened for and against in this one, and how the Canucks were able to come back from a 2-0 deficit to beat the Columbus Blue Jackets. It's Satir Shah with Bick Nizar. You are listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on Home Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Dan Riccio.
And Satir Shah.
Join us for Canucks Central, where we will set up the game and break down the latest around the Canucks.
4 to 6 p.m. and post-game on Sportsnet 650 and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Jordan Harris behind his own net, clear near point. Carson Soucy holds in for Connor Garland to the left corner. Garland on the end boards, protecting the puck from Harris out the right wing side. In front for Suter with a one-timer. He scores! Merzlikins got a piece of it with the pad, but it rolled past him and slowly across the goal line. The Canucks have their first lead of the game. It's 3-2.
He's worked on his shot, especially at the start of the year. I remember, I don't know if I had him on the fight. I don't know what line I had him on. And I remember he came in. He wasn't even complaining. He just said, hey, can you, what can I do to get better? And, you know, we talked about his practice. And he was staying on shooting a lot of pucks. I feel that's really helped him. I think the shot has really improved from last year, and it's off quicker. Obviously, playing with guards helps too. And guards gave him a beautiful setup. So yeah, but yeah, he's making the most of his time. Suits, have him out there last minute, as a winger. So he writes Swiss Army knife.
Because he's Swiss.
That's honestly the nickname. Like, you can't call him Swiss Army Knife anymore. You have to call him Swiss Army Knife because he's Swiss.
Because exactly. You just have to do it.
It's such a mouthy nickname.
It's fantastic. Dan Riccio does it really well on Canuck Central. And this is the Canuck Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment, after a 5-2 Canucks win over the Columbus Blue Jackets, where, Pugh Suter came up big again and scored yet another goal.
Because
he's Swiss. The Swiss Army Knife comes up big yet
again.
On
HockeyReference.com, they have like the player nicknames. So like on Brock Besser, they've got Bess, The Flow, and some of the ones that you've never even heard of before. Like Mr. Sensitive, Sunshine, Prince Charming.
Well, I've heard the Mr. Sensitive one.
It's been a joke because it's been brought up before. But like some of the nicknames don't even make sense. Pugh Suter, we got to get that one on there with Swiss Army Knife. Because he's Swiss.
So if anybody is a contributor to Hockey Reference or is able to add the nicknames, please go and do so for Pugh Suter, who scored yet again for the Vancouver Canucks. And we heard the thoughts of the head coach, and he spoke about Pugh Suter as well, Bick, and he talked about how he came up to him and said, hey, what can I do to be better? And essentially, what can I do to be a bigger part of the team? And he mentioned the shot, and he's been working on it after practice. And lo and behold, he's finishing off more opportunities, getting his 10th goal of the season. And it's one of those things where his ability to obviously be versatile to do different things. And we have a question for Roman from Abbotsford, which we'll get to, and we'll do an overrated, underrated. He has one, and we'll do it here about Pew Suter and where he should play. But his ability to be versatile, of course, is massive. But the thing I love about his game, outside of so many other things he does well, is the IQ he has and his ability to find open space. And we know how good Connor Garland is at evading pressure and able to find space, and he draws defenders towards him as well because he creates chaos. And if you're able to find open space playing alongside Connor Garland, you are going to get some scoring opportunities, and that's exactly what we saw here tonight. And that's a real nice combination with Dakota Joshua not finding his game yet, Bick. The chemistry between Pew Suter and Garland has been tremendous.
I actually think I'll highlight two players on their goals here, Besser and Suter, because it's early work when that puck gets there that you're able to make this play. Now, Suter's is more about peeling away from coverage, and he peels away from Severson, but gets this shot off, as you're highlighting. And Brock's goal, you watch this play, like Brock's getting himself ready in position to shoot, and the stick's already up well in advance. Like Quinn's not even at the first post as he's coming around the net, right?
Yeah.
So that work nice and early to make sure these shots are quick and positioning yourself in the right spots to get the receive the puck. Very, very clever play by both guys. And obviously we highlight, you know, players like Besser quite a bit.
Yeah.
DeBrusk is getting a lot of love. But as Roman texts in, he's like, I always text in, game out. A Suter doesn't get the rightful praise. I promise I'm not – this isn't his agent's burner. But nevertheless, like, he deserves some praise right now because he's filling the net. And in a very pivotal time, ends up with now 11 on the season. They've needed every bit of those goals.
Yeah, and his question, overrated, underrated, reuniting Suter with Miller and Besser when Miller does come back. I think that's really dependent for me on Dakota Joshua finding his game.
Sure, yeah.
Because I want – Garland, if Garland's not going to play on the top two lines with how good he's been, I want somebody to play next to him that he can really feed off of. And I think Teddy Bluger can be a really nice kind of middle guy, glue guy on a line. We saw that when the chemistry was between Joshua and Garland, but Bluger just did all the dirty work, and he found himself being the good connected guy. He was really good on the forecheck, but he wasn't the guy that anybody had the main chemistry with. With Dakota Joshua not being there, I don't know if I would move. I'd say overrated at the moment until Joshua finds his game. I'd probably just try to find somebody else. I maybe even give Hoglander a shot. And I know I will get to Hoglander in a bit. But
I don't even know if we have time for that.
I mean, that's like a sit down on the couch and lay down and let's have a conversation situation. But nonetheless, I don't know if you can move him off the Garland until Dakota Joshua gets going.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's like JT, Suter and Besser, and then Garland, Pettersson, DeBrusk.
You could do that. Yeah, you could do that. The only thing is, I still think with the way Pettersson's at his best and Garland's at his best, they kind of don't mix.
I don't think that fits, right?
Like, yeah.
So if you want to put Besser and Suter together, they're going to go with JT.
Yeah.
Or is it JT, Garland, and Suter? Like, I don't know if that's a fit.
I
guess if the way Suter's shooting, like that, he would be that guy.
Yeah, you could. I think Suter's going to find himself back there, and I think that's probably his best spot on this roster.
Playing there,
I just don't know if it happens.
Let's
immediately.
Let's be really clear: like he's earning a top six spot right
100%. But even if he's playing, to me, it's like if you're even playing the so-called third line, the way they get deployed,
sure,
they're still playing a ton of minutes, 5-on-5.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know,
it's just. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Tyler and Langley. Suter is a utility player. Multifaceted Swiss Army knife is perfect. By the way.
Because he's Swiss.
By the way, we'll be our unsung hero this season. And the icon says, pew, pew. Pew
there
Suter. Yeah, there we go. I love it. All right. Before we get to more reaction, we are going to play Pew Suter's thoughts coming up in a little bit here. He did meet with the media post-game. Let's get through the goals. You kind of mentioned what you liked on the shooters, on Suter and Besser on the two goals, but it was the Columbus Blue Jackets opening up the scoring. And this is a playbook where we talked about that Brännström-Desharnais pair. They've had some struggles recently, and this was not a great shift. And honestly,
you've got a bigger complaint about Brännström than I do.
Yes, we'll get to the Brännström one, but I think without question, this all starts because, number one, Desharnais couldn't handle a puck behind the net, and then he made a wrong decision to chase behind the net. So it's twofold on Desharnais, no doubt.
I know we have a texter that texts in a lot, Pardeep, who tries to prompt me with one of my phrases here of, I just want to understand, okay? And there was 3 to 4 moments today on angles on retrievals for Vinny Desharnais, or it's like, I just want to understand.
Yeah.
You're so big. You've got the advantage on Sillinger on the angle, but you give him free access to the puck.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can stack that, and then he's just on your back, and you can go make your decision whichever direction you want to go, but you invite Sillinger to make a play on you.
Yeah.
And Sillinger does the job, right? Lifts the stick, pulls the puck away, Aston Reese knocks it back down, and, you know, oh, by the way, like, also, you don't handle the puck when it comes back to you, and so Sillinger makes that great pass. You don't even cut off the near post, so he can't get that pass to Olivier. You're never going to catch him on the back post. It's just like, I don't see the project right now. Like, I wish there were just momentary flashes. I see it on the PK. Like, he's very good on the PK, but I don't know if you can make a career out of saying, like, it's a mess at 5-on-5, but PK, I'm here for you, right? Like, you can't be the bullpen closer and just show up on the PK.
Well, and I can see how his value could be higher in the playoffs when the game does change and becomes even, you know, a lot tighter, and he does excel in those situations a bit more where it is a more low event and scrappy. But that's a long way away. And yeah. Right now, he's a liability.
You're marking a role for that?
If he's your 7-8 defenseman and you have him around, right? Sure. But again, it's $2
million. But he's being paid like a 7-8.
I don't know. We'll talk more about this next week, but and how Desharnais fits in. But I wouldn't be surprised, Bick, that the Desharnais experiment is also, you know, being accepted that it's not going to plan.
Trending
that,
in a way.
That it's trending in a certain way. But the problem is, I'm not sure anybody's lining up to trade for him, right? So it's one of those things, you have to see how it goes. But I'm not sure the organization is as excited about him as they were when they signed him, obviously, with how things have gone with his play. But you're right. A lot of that, it's on Desharnais. My issue with Brännström on the play, and, you know, the biggest thing is just how he angles his body to me. I get what you mean, because as soon as Sillinger gets the puck, he's worried about the wraparound, so he goes towards the far post. But Lankin is already trending towards that. He's already going towards that. If you look at where Besser is, he can always crash back and take Sillinger if Sillinger comes around with the wraparound. He just sells out to me and leaves Olivier. It's... And if he's facing the far boards.
Yeah.
So his body, he's completely has his back turned to Olivier, who he was just with a moment before. I just don't think you can have that body position in that spot, because at least if you're facing Sillinger, you can pivot across, at least get your stick across from it. He's just so out of the play.
Yeah.
And to me, that's where you compound things. It's one thing for one guy to make a mistake. You can't take yourself out of the play. Both guys took themselves out of the play to me, and allowing Olivier to be that wide open back door.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't moment, right? Because if he sticks to Olivier and Sillinger wraps that, we're sitting here thinking, like, you got to get to the post, right? Like, you can read that Desharnais is behind. But the thing I will say, and it's kind of the recurring theme, where he kind of gets stuck between two decisions, where he's not doing either in this stage, right? He's, like, right in front of Lankinen. He's not there on the near post, or on the far post if Sillinger gets there. He's not there in the near post, cutting off access to Olivier. And you can actually see this. The thing I will give credence to is, like, he shoulder checks at the wrong time.
Yeah, and he looks over his left shoulder instead of his right shoulder.
And so he's never really looking at Sillinger.
What's the awareness?
In the moment.
When the awareness, too, is you should know your teammates to your left of you.
Yes.
So trust that he's looking to the left, look over your right. But nonetheless, it's a tough situation that starts with Desharnais making a mess of it, right? I think that's fair. The second goal happens. I mean, this is when the play is 4-on-4, offsetting minors for both teams.
It goes
4
tonight.
Yeah, a couple of those.
Again, this was such a weird game.
It was. I mean,
there was one in every period.
We don't have time for the officiating, but it's also one of those where can you make me understand how this officiating is working?
Just
but nonetheless,
doesn't
want to understand. But this is to me just Severson having more speed on the breakout, and it's not on Besser, but you can see Besser, because he's a second forward. Petey's already down the goal line. He has to be kind of more aware about stepping back a little bit.
It was 3v2 on a board battle in the corner, right? So Besser's kind of there, but. When I think it was Voronkov or behind the net, or Marchenko kind of left it for Provorov, and Besser kind of does a spin.
And he just kind of stood to face the play for a moment,
and he has a step on Severson already when they start to take off, but Severson just beats him up the ice, and Provorov hits it.
Yeah, and I'm not blaming Besser on it necessarily, just one of those tough plays. You just see the speed difference, and to your point, maybe Lankin didn't play it great, but it's a great shot to make it 2-0. Then the Canucks finally make it a score a goal, and it happens after they had a couple of shifts finally off for PK. They created a chance for Dakota Joshua to Garland. They got a face-off. Pedersen got a wraparound chance, had another face-off, and this is where they win one, and Quinn Hughes goes to work, Bick.
You stop your feet now, right? Like, this is the thing. Like, forwards have overcommitted and chased after Quinn Hughes, and he's cut back inside and burned him. This one, Matthew Olivier just kind of stops his feet for, honestly, a quarter of a second, half a second, and that's a green flag for Quinn Hughes. Actually, I don't know F1 flags. I may have just chosen the wrong one. But nevertheless, he activates and just flies down the boards and hits on, rather than a wraparound, which he's done, or find a guy on the far post or in the slot, Besser opens up and has got the stick ready. And I think they make a connection. Like, they make eye contact yeah. well before Hughes comes around the net. And a bunch of Blue Jackets players flooded away from Besser, and so he finds him, and he picks that far side.
Yeah, and the Canucks after that obviously got things going even more and are able to tie the game, Bick. And I know people weren't expecting the Canucks to be able to come back and tie things with the way that things had been going, but Elvis Merzlikins gives the Canucks an absolute gift.
2 minutes.
I just want to understand. I don't – like, Werenski's got the angle. He's going to yeah. win it easily. Of all people, like, he can skate away from two guys easily, and he makes a meal of it, and suddenly Canucks are back into it.
And we kind of broke down the game-winning goal from Hugh Suter a bit earlier, where he got his 10th goal of the season, then his 11th, did score two tonight and went into an empty net. But just good work from Garland, and again, you know, Hugh Suter for getting himself into scoring position and makes it a 3-2 game. And Jake DeBrusk, we joked with him about this one, mm-hmm. just like they drew it up. Quinn Hughes fans, what, he breaks his stick on the shot?
He breaks his stick
on the shot, and DeBrusk just gets enough of it to score his first goal on home ice.
Yeah. And as Rick Tocchet said, right, he says he's around the pay. Don't care if yeah. it's a fluke goal or, you know, just, you got to be there to put a stick on it. It's a good sign that he's scoring that much in that paint. That was the quote from Rick Tocchet. And you think the Detroit goal, right, like there have been goals in rebound situations, tip situations, and that's what he's having success at right now on top of, you know, having a good motor, skating well. Obviously, you remember the shot, the game-winning goal there as well. But he does it again, and he just kind of gets a stick in the right spot. And as Merzlikins is coming across, it just goes 5-hole.
Yeah, the Canucks make it 4-2, and that's really all they needed. But Pugh Suter did get an empty netter as well to make it 5-2, and Elias Pettersson gets the assist on it. But Pugh Suter ends up with two goals on the evening and now has 8 points. Yeah, 8 points, Bick, in the 8 games without JT Miller.
Massive.
And he's playing 18 minutes a game.
Just huge, right?
Yeah, it's incredible.
You talk about next man up and someone to fill the void. Pugh Suter has done exactly that.
Yeah, exactly. We'll hear from him on the other side, plus Ian McIntyre, and more of your reaction to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox. You can grab the phone line as well, 604-280-0650. This is the Canucks Central postgame show after 5-2 win over the Blue Jackets, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd
and Thomas Drance.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Werenski held in. Right side, Favreau. Heavy drive. Lankinen turned it wide again. And it deflects back into the Columbus zone. Merzlikins charging out of the net. Gave it away to Bluger. He's got it right wing. Into the slot. Sherwood scores! Elvis Merzlikins went walkabout. And Kiefer Sherwood fires it into the open net. His 7th of the year ties the game at 2 with 1 minute left in the second.
And Batchy knew this was coming at some point. Merzlikins has had an adventure of a game. And here he goes out to the left-hand side to play the puck, not trusting his defenseman in that situation as he was there as well. Good play by Teddy Bluger to step up, cause the turnover, and a quick trigger by Kiefer Sherwood and an angry Elvis Merzlikins there. Zach Werenski was in the neighborhood. In that moment, you want your defenseman to take it, but the Canucks benefit 2-2.
Canucks tied things up and also go on to win 5-2 over the Columbus Blue Jackets. Comeback victory for the Canucks. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. And we'll get to Pugh Suter coming up in a few moments, and we'll also hear from Ian McIntyre. And we have a lot of reaction on the text inbox, 650-650. We were talking about how there's been a bit of a struggle on the back end for Desharnais and Brännström tonight. Chris from Maple Ridge says they had to break up Soucy and Myers, and Soucy's obviously a bit better, but they ruined the gelling of Juulsen and Brännström. And I'm sure you guys have noticed Brännström's offensive game has fallen off a cliff since being paired with Vinny Desharnais, calling it a bit of a black hole. And we'll see Derek Forbort's getting closer to a return. I would rather give Forbort a chance with Brännström and have Brännström play the right side. Like I'd be fine with that. At least try it. And others have asked, should Mark Friedman get in? Is it at that point where you want to play Mark Friedman instead of Vinny Desharnais for a game or two, or because you won, you just kind of hang on for another one? I mean, if you look at it from the way he was deployed, the coaches again, like it's not like they shied away from him. He played almost 17 minutes 5-on-5, 18:35 on the night. So it's not like, you know, they soured on his play significantly as the game wore on.
No, you're right. He does get an assist, plus one.
Like on that play, I'm sure they won't love the goal. I'm just saying, if I'm, you know, people are wondering if Friedman's getting in. I don't know if he's getting in next game.
I think because of the Forbort like PK utility, that might negate the necessity to have Desharnais as well.
Yeah.
I just think it's just better to try Forbort and Brännström to me. That just makes more sense.
Yeah.
Just because, like, you're going to need a puck mover on that. Desharnais and Forbort. And I do think Forbert's going to have, like, an Ian Cole-light presence as far as being able to move the puck. But you'd still rather have a natural puck mover on that with Brännström. Just right now, just based on the minutes, you're right. It's trending towards Brännström bring out. But I don't know. It's just I think it makes more sense to have Forbort and Brännström right now.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. On Nils Höglander, this one from Jim from Surrey, what's the word on Hoags? Somebody asked, is this the last game he's going to play? I'm sorry, I don't remember who texted that in.
It's harsh.
That is a little bit harsh. No, I don't think this is his last game. You did see a bit of a death stare from the head coach at Nils Höglander on the bench at one point in the game.
Fuzz from Burnaby was the one. Was that the last penalty Höglander takes as a Canuck?
Last penalty. I mean, it depends if you can. How many games can he go without taking a penalty? Maybe many.
And look, I'll read a couple of texts here that I think are a bit over the top, but we like to read them.
like to read them. Vic's like, I like to read the slander, to be honest. Okay, go on.
No, I mean, like, we like to try to provide the perspective.
Sure,
and we can push back on him. But Mac in Nova Scotia. If I'm Höglander, I'm not going to want to try hard for this coach. Talks embarrassing in front of the fans and teammates. Keep the drama for the dressing room. It's an unprofessional look. We're talking about a moment in the second period, or the first period.
That's there, yeah.
Where he kind of has, like, the stare at Höglander. And this one, Jamie, feel bad for Höglander. Tocchet has totally decimated his career. Okay, here's the point I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about a player who scored 24 goals last year under this head coach. We're talking about a player who got a $9 million contract under this coach. And I've said this before, like, harsh does not mean it's unfair.
Yeah.
So, like, there's been plenty of rewards here for Nils Höglander. So, yeah, it's being harsh. Such is the standard of playing for this organization right now.
Mm-hmm.
Such is the standard of trying to achieve big things for this organization. Sure, it's harsh. This isn't youth sports where you have to coddle players. You don't have to go out of your way and, you know,
embarrass them or anything.
Embarrass them or even something even more extreme, like you know, like that Montgomery moment on the bench or something more evolved than that. Like,
yeah.
Anything that's happened is not unfair.
I don't know. I mean, I don't disagree that it has been unfair. And
you can't take penalties in the offensive zone.
He takes, and he's been on the ice for a lot of goals against.
You got to skate back on goals. On potential opportunities. Like, you know you're in the doghouse right now. The last thing that anyone should be worried about is effort.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a goal a couple of games ago, you know, out there with Besser and Pettersson, and a bunch of people had moments in the Detroit game on that play.
The one he throws, he gets – well, you don't mind
the one he goes into the boards, I don't mind that. But it's like the skating back.
Back, he stops skating.
Dude, like, I went on this rant, and it's like, I don't know what to talk about if you're not willing to skate.
Yeah.
It's a sport that requires skating, and you're not playing a lot. This shouldn't be an energy conversation. You came into camp in the best shape. The coach praised you for that, by the way, for all these people texting about, like, oh, Tocchet's too hard on him. The coach highlighted his athletic ability at bare minimum.
They gave him a contract extension.
At bare minimum, can you skate and can you not take penalties?
And the thing I will point out, too, is the first 10 games of the season, Nils Höglander was averaging almost 15 minutes a game. He was playing a bigger role, and he was a bit productive. He played well. He was productive. And as his game tailed off, so have his minutes, right? Like, it's kind of gone hand in hand. And I'm actually, and as much as you guys know me, I've been a skeptic of Nils Höglander for a long time. But I will say, like, this is kind of the player he's been. He has moments like this, and he's also most likely going to get hot at some point and score some goals and feel good and provide. The question is, can he mature and get better? And I think it can work with the head coach, because I think he's shown with guys like Connor Garland even and other players that they can grow and get bigger opportunities, and he's not going to hold a personal grudge against anybody. Like, I don't believe that's the case. And I think it's just Höglander's got to learn and get better, and he's young enough to get better. They've invested in him, and sure, any player can get traded, right? Like, who knows what happens? But I still think it's kind of part of the process, and I just wasn't sure that Höglander was ready this year. But I'm also not sitting here saying, oh, my God, this guy's a failure. What's going on with the head coach? Because this is nothing we haven't seen before. He's had these issues before under Travis. He had issues like this under Boudreaux as well. And we've seen this part of his game last year. Remember the first 15 games, 20 games of last year, he struggled. And then he found his game, right? So I'm not seeing anything we haven't seen, and I'd imagine it would get better. He just needs some confidence to get his going, and he has to find a way to work hard if he's not getting some bounces.
The especially puzzling part is last year, like the 24 goals, a lot of it was tips, rebounds, and those types of opportunities. I don't even see him near the net on these chances. And one of his goals this year was an amazing shot. You think, all right, like that looks like it's taken a step and a big improvement. And he chatted with us preseason, and one of the things he wanted to do is reestablish that 20-goal mark. Well, your success came on in and around the net last season, and so far you're basically taking one shot a game, just hovering under two attempts a game.
Yeah,
he was shooting a lot more and getting into dangerous areas. I know it's limited minutes, but it's not Rick Tocchet's job to like dedicate all the resources to Nils Höglander's development, especially when he's hurting the team in moments.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you can't be a liability, and I think those are the moments where it has happened too much. But I think at some point this season he is going to turn things around and get going again, and he's going to be a guy who's going to be streaky.
I'm just done with the text of like, oh, well, he had a 50% or 57% Corsi, and it's like, all right, well, he's not skating and he's taking penalties. What do you want to do about that?
Well, again, you can look at the goals against when he's been on the ice. It's amongst per 60 amongst the worst amongst forwards on the team. And like he's on the ice for more goals against, raw goals against, than guys who are playing significantly more than he is. And most coaches won't put up with that, especially when there isn't scoring coming on the other end. All right, we mentioned Pew Suter and the contributions he made on the ice tonight. Two goals to get himself to 11 on the campaign through 20. What, this was game 26 tonight? Game
25.
Game 25. The guy has 11 goals in 25 games.
It's pretty decent.
That's not bad. And here is Pew Suter after the game meeting with the media on him scoring and the Canucks pulling out the comeback victory.
Yeah, it's huge. You know, coming back from a road trip, sometimes the legs a bit. And it's just got to make sure we, you know, survive the first. And then I think we did a pretty good job.
The team that plays that fast does stand out from how most of your opponents play. Is that something you can't quite necessarily be ready for until you're in it?
Yeah, you can. You know, it's just good. You got to swing with the guys. Don't let them, don't sit backwards and sit back. Kind of get their speed, stay above them. We did a better job going on later on.
What is it about this team that allows you guys to make comebacks?
We're just sticking with it. I think just keep it simple. We don't try to too fancy stuff. No matter what the score is, we're trying not to. And we get in a forecheck, and then we get those pucks back, and that's kind of how it's been going.
You did a lot of different things well for this team a year ago, but you weren't necessarily counted on to score as many goals. What's changed when you get those opportunities this year that's allowing you to finish?
I think I'm just shooting a bit better, for sure, than the last 2-3 years. Feeling more confident in my shot, and I get hope it kind of pays off right now.
Is that something that you've spent time working on in the offseason in terms of your shot?
Yeah, for sure, a lot. You know, you always drag something around the season, so sometimes you can't do as much. And this summer, I really had time to get that done.
It felt like there was a lot of animosity out there on the ice, especially near the end. Was that just Columbus getting frustrated with you guys kind of shutting them down after the first period?
I mean, it's kind of both ways. You know, we after that first, we're trying to get a little bit something going as well. And just kind of get everybody into it and get the crowd. And, yeah, just kind of, you know how it goes.
Do you appreciate Petey giving you a chance to pad your goal total with the empty net?
Yeah, for sure. I almost had a little bit too much time on that, but... I know we're just trying to finish the game, finish off the game, and whatever the best option is, we'll try to do that.
How about Kevin and the way he played tonight?
Yeah, I know he's been great for us, giving us a chance. After that first, keeping it close, and then just shutting it down.
What did it mean to you guys to have Thatcher back, even if it was just on the bench and not on the ice?
Yeah, I was a huge part of the team, and it was nice to hear him in just warm-ups. I think I made a couple of saves in warm-ups, and the crowd was ready to go. So, it's always good to have guys back and be part of the team again.
That is Pew Suter meeting with the media after the game. A 5-2 Canucks victory, scored two goals, and he gave a lot of credit to Kevin Lankinen, and that's something that Jake DeBrusque also did when he chatted with us right after the game from the Canucks, outside the Canucks locker room. And we had a lot of people texting in here on the post-game show too. I have to give a lot of credit to Kevin Lankinen. Dylan from Victoria, a great show as always. I joined late, but want to give Lankinen some love. The way she loves his look this year, I think it's safe to say he has saved the season. Thanks, guys. And, common refrain from Pew Suter. They were down a couple goals, but the goalie gave him a chance to come back, and that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, just keep providing those opportunities. Big save against Fantilli late in that first period after the 2-0 goal, and just be the calming influence. And they also did a good job on the PK, right, making it easy for Lankinen, and he had to do what he had to do on the PK, but just hold the line, right? 2-0, you can come back for it. You heard it from Jake DeBrusque, two-shot game, and suddenly you get a chance, and an opportunity presents itself, a freebie later on that Sherwood cashes in on for his seventh of the season as well. So they're getting contributions from a lot of different people.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And when you look at Pew Suter, 11 goals on the season, you look at a guy making 1.6. If he had 11 goals at the end of the season, you wouldn't look at that and say, oh, that's horrible production. You're paying him 1.6, right? He's on pace for,
29?
30 goals almost. And I think he's on pace for 34 goals right now. So I'm not sure he's going to hit that number, but is it out of the realm of possibility that he may hit 20 this season? He's a guy who's hit 15 goals before. He had 14 and 55 games in his rookie season. So when you scored at that pace and hit 15, you can probably hit 20 at some point. And if he does, that's just incredible contributions down your lineup. And you mentioned Sherwood, but just go through the Canucks in general. They have three players who have 7 goals, Pedersen, Besser, and Sherwood. They have 2 guys who have 6 goals. That's JT Miller and Quinn Hughes. And even guys like Eric Brandstrom, Teddy Bluger, and Danton Heinen have combined for 10 goals. And you add that up, it's 3 or 4 goals here and there, but that's kind of how you piece it together. And that's how the Canucks, despite the injuries and some players not being at their top form, have been able to pick up results the way they have.
Yeah, Bluger, again, he's on pace to basically have a career year. And this is a guy who was mentioned as there's more offense there. All right, we'll see it. And he had 28 points last year and now put him up for 11 in 25 now. So that's on pace for basically 36 points. So it's a strong year for him.
Yeah, absolutely. This text here from Robin Victoria. Am I the only one that thinks DeBrusque is going to be money in the playoffs? And I mean, the way he plays, that's the type of style and how he's scoring goals that you would think is going to be valuable come playoff time. If he can continue building his confidence, and I think confidence is a big part of how he is as a player, because we know he can be streaky. Can he find a bit more consistency in scoring some goals? But his style of play would be conducive to being successful in the playoffs, I think, to Rob's point.
Sorry, who was this?
This is Jake DeBrusque.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's the areas of the ice that are most difficult, right? Being in that slot area, and he scores with the tip tonight, but he's had moments where he's finding the spaces and battling really hard, and now suddenly him and Besser are this dynamic duo. Like, I think about that Detroit game where he's in front of Seider and Besser's behind Seider, and they're both kind of just in line waiting for a pass for Pedersen. They're tough to handle and in power play situations. If they're both going to just create 2-on-1 advantages in front of the net, good luck, because Brock Besser, the way he screens, has been amongst the NHL's best, and he's obviously been very productive there since Rick Tocchet has arrived, and now throw in Jake DeBrusque, who's going to be a challenge for goalies and defenders to deal with.
Yeah, and he's somebody that us in the media love chatting with, and you heard him post-game. If you missed the post-game show, you can always listen to the start of it on the podcast, on the Canucks Central podcast, on any of your podcatchers. But now it's time for us to hand over the reins to the man we call the Triple Threat, here to close the show. You watch him on TV, you read him on digital, you're about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
But you won't see me as Taylor Swift.
You're too busy for that.
I'd fit right in, though, wouldn't I?
Yeah, I mean, that's your...
Well, she transcends all demographics, though, right?
Just like you do.
There'd be people older than me there.
Yeah.
Oh, I just like I did. That was good, Seth. I just blew past that one. Very good.
It was quite the diverse demographic as I was walking
yes,
up to the...
Yes, but they have something in common. They all were dressed very glittery.
Yeah, a lot of shimmering jackets and skirts and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I think we transcend demographics as well. Like Canucks Nation, I mean, look at how diverse this fan base was. And they probably didn't know what to make of
diverse with opinions tonight.
Yeah, you know, we haven't really touched on it, but also a fan base that is very passionate. And the head coach said it was a really nice moment hearing the fans chant for JT Miller tonight. And it was a loud chant later in the game. And it did pop up a few times, but it really got going later in the game when they had the lead. But it just shows you how invested this market all of a sudden is, again, with this team and how emotionally connected they are with the players that's not in the lineup right now.
Yeah, and you know what? I bet that meant a ton to JT, and hopefully we'll be able to ask him about it soon, because kind of the buried news from this morning's availability by talk, it was his little tidbit that he thinks that Miller could be practicing soon, not tomorrow, but pretty soon, which is great news for the Canucks. I presume that's also great news for JT, because it means he's had some success to this point in dealing with whatever personal issues he's been dealing with. So that was it was a nice moment. It was a nice third period for Vancouver, because I don't know how in the world they went into it tied 2-2, given the way they played the first 40 minutes. But they
what
were
a bizarre game.
They were in a position, play one good period, and you win a home game, and that's what they did. And I'm not even sure it was a good period, but it was certainly the best of their three periods, and there were lots of nice sub stories within that. Kevin Lankinen, you know, what a spell he has had, and we don't know whether the Lankinen era is coming to an end. See what I did there?
Yes, Seth, very good, very good.
The Lankinen era is coming to an end as a starter now that Thatcher Demko's back on the bench. But what a performance by him. That isn't going to get a whole lot of attention, because, you know, people generally, you don't remember at the third period of a comeback win all the big saves he made in the first two.
Yeah.
But he made a pile of them. It was nice for Brock Besser to get his 400th point as a Canuck, given what his journey has been like over the years and how difficult it's been at times. It was only 2 years ago he himself asked for a trade request. Or made a trade request and then rescinded it, and has been just a fantastic player before that. Since then, he was a really good player before then too. And Jake DeBrusque, you guys had him on radio, right? Right
after the game.
So did you know that he had never scored a goal in Vancouver?
Yeah, he told us that. He was very excited. He said we didn't actually follow up on
I'll,
it, but he said
I'll
there's one
right
rink
now.
He hasn't scored in the league now. But
he
was very excited to finally score here.
Yeah, so I knew about that on the road trip, and I'd mentioned it to him, and he said, well, I'd wondered when somebody was going to ask me about that. But, of course, that was a road trip. He scored 8 goals, so I wasn't going to write
– Yeah.
At that point, the story about him not having ever scored a goal in Vancouver, but it was on my list. And, he allowed me to write it and write it in a way that he's probably pretty happy to contribute post-game to the story by talking about that. His two rinks that he's never scored in.
Oh, you have the other one?
American Airlines Arena in Dallas. And he said he thinks he's only played there a couple of times. You know, he has had some injuries, and for some reason that's a place he hasn't played much, but he has played as sporadic as the Bruins visits were. He didn't miss any of those games, he thinks, and had never scored here. The other one, of course, is the new rink in Utah, which is already on his list. But he said he told me he was very aware of this when he signed that 7-year, $38.5 million contract to come to Vancouver, that he had never scored in this building, and he was making a huge commitment, as were the Canucks, obviously, for him to be playing here, possibly for the rest of his career. We'll see how that goes. But he said he figured, given himself 7 years, he'd get there eventually.
Yeah.
He just didn't know that it would take this long.
So through just the game, like, well, we are in a stretch where we're kind of dismissing process in general, right? Like, they're out.
Well,
they're out some bodies here, right?
Yeah.
So you get 2 points, and they do this comeback thing again, which is obviously a positive. But, you know, I what stage are we in? We're what are we taking from these games right now?
Well, they're 25 games in. Mm-hmm. So I would disagree that we're, you know, disregarding the process. In fact, it was the process that got them through that road trip. You know, that road trip was a great example of, as imperfect as this team has been, they've raised their floor so much under Tocchet that if they, for the most part, can play their game, they'll still win more than they lose. So I think that process is still important. I think we're for sure giving them a degree of latitude with it.
Sure.
Because
that's a softer word.
Right. Because of, you know, I'm
a writer.
Oh, okay. You know,
I had no idea.
I'm pretty good at vocabulary. Occasionally. Now I shouldn't have said that.
See, I'm in radio. I need the sharp words.
Yeah, I guarantee you there's some typos in my story now that I'll think of at 3 this morning. But that's the great thing about writing for a website compared to the old newspaper days. There's no permanence to it. You know, it's a rumor if I've made a mistake. Oh, yeah, they fixed that, but it was different early on. I think the process is important. They can't come away from tonight obviously thinking all is well because they scored the 5 goals. That was an absolutely atrocious first period. I don't know how to explain it. Tocchet said yesterday that this is now in players' heads, you know, the home record. But a lot of it was out of their heads and into their hands and feet as well. And also in their heads with some of the decision making. But, you know, what they have shown is that they're resourceful and resilient. We've talked about that a lot in this first third of the season, coming up on a third of the season. And they displayed that again tonight. And they do have a lot of talent up front and certainly depth up front. Like, you know, this was kind of an organizational objective when they went out and they signed those free agents in July. And one of them, Daniel Sprong's already gone. And, you know, Desharnais, who's a defenseman, he's been a healthy scratch. So who knows where it all ends up. But the team, without argument, mm-hmm. has guys contributing from throughout the lineup. You know, look at Pius Suter. Who had him for 11 goals in 25 games? He needs 5 more for his career high. I'm guessing that he gets it over mm-hmm. the next 57. DeBrusk, after his slow start, now he's got 12 goals.
Yeah.
12 goals already.
Yeah.
After not scoring in the first
he's
9.
He's all of a sudden on pace for 40 goals.
Yes. and then you know, Pedersen's game has come back. Brock missed some time and struggled a little on the road trip when he came back. Great for him to get a goal tonight. Mm-hmm. You know, his first one since his concussion. So that should help. And now we're all waiting for JT to come back. But they've had and Dakota Joshua, another guy who's still, like, bit by bit working his way back to the player that he was. And he looks a lot better now than when he first came back from his cancer surgery, but still has a ways to go. So, you know, there's so much room for growth. And that's as JT said to me, you know, shortly before his leave of absence. That's why it's so exciting, because they know that there's so many areas that they could be better, and on an individual basis, so much room for growth. And when they start to see that growth, then you're really going to see this team take off. But in the meantime, they're doing okay. You know, they're doing all right. I don't know if it's a bit of a false economy. I don't really think so. I mean, there's been some luck. A game mm-hmm. like tonight,
yeah.
certainly there's some luck.
Sometimes the goalies involved. Just make bizarre decisions for you.
They do. They do. I mean, I'm trying to think when that's gone against the Canucks. I'm sure that it has.
But now, you know, Kachetkov and Wilkins have gifted them goals.
In fact, I saw Vancouver score into their own goal in Arizona. I don't know how long ago that was now, on a delayed
Was that the Erickson one?
No, that was the Erickson one was the first,
his home game, right?
His home game.
Yeah, well, there was another one in Arizona.
On the road, yeah. I know which one you're talking about.
So, you know, it's
Arizona. Remember when they were a team?
Yeah, the hockey gods are funny, and mostly they've taken a stern view over the years towards the Canucks, but they got a little bit of luck tonight.
Well, and you know,
and a lot of Kevin Lankinen.
He was tremendous for the team tonight. And you know, somebody texted in about Noah Juulsen, and you know, we spoke about Quinn Hughes, of course, and how every game he does something. I'm not even sure it was his best game, but nonetheless, still doing Quinn Hughes things. And Carson Soucy had a strong game, but Noah Juulsen, for all the struggles Desharnais has had, and Brännström hasn't been able to be as effective now playing alongside Desharnais. Juulsen deserves some credit for how steady he's been alongside Soucy the last couple of games. And tonight, you know, on the PK especially, like the texter pointed out, he finds a way to block shots and get the puck out of the zone.
Yeah. I think he's giving the Canucks what they would hope for from Noah Juulsen. Still makes some mistakes, but his mistakes tend to be of aggression.
Yeah.
And it's easier to live with those than some other mistakes. I think, you know, just as I said a few minutes ago, kind of the hidden news or from this morning was the little tidbit about Miller practicing soon. I think kind of a hidden story from that road trip, because there was a lot of good, is just that, you know, Soucy Juulsen has really solidified that second pairing. And some of it is Juulsen, but a lot of it is Soucy. Carson was struggled so badly and really, and I think I made this point previously, I people talked about Tyler Myers' bad start. Myers wasn't good the first couple of weeks, but after that, I think he was really suffering playing with Soucy, that Soucy was dragging him down. Well, Carson Soucy's elevated his game, and I think he's actually helping now pull Juulsen up. But between the two of them, they've solidified the second pairing. And so now, you know, it's not something that Tocchet and Adam Foote at the moment have to worry about. Like, they don't have to worry about protecting those two guys or chasing matchups too hard. I think they obviously still want to shelter the third pairing as best they can, as most teams do. But I think the Soucy Juulsen play together is a big factor in this run since the start of the last road trip.
Yeah, I think it is, and I think the way Carson Soucy's played, it's come at the best time possible for the Canucks with Filip Hronek out, and we'll see if the Canucks can get by enough that the team doesn't go out to acquire help or.
Well,
or
they're going to get another defenseman soon.
Yeah,
right. Derek Forbert's coming back, so you know that probably means. Desharnais comes out, although, you know, you got to look at righties and lefties. But maybe Brännström comes out, or maybe you end up starting to see a committee or a platoon.
Yeah.
But I think Forbert, it's really too bad. He's had such a tough start to his time with the Canucks, the leave of absence for the passing of his father. And then he actually seemed, when he came back from that, whether it was, you know, some clarity, whether it was just emotional relief to be back with his team, but actually looked like he was going to find his game. He only played a couple and then got hurt at a practice in Anaheim, so it's been a really tough start for him. But when he gets back, if he plays the way that he's capable of playing, he's going to be a lineup regular. He's not going to be. So then it's just a matter of who is your sixth guy going
to
be.
Yeah, and that's something we'll look forward to discussing, because it means another Canuck gets healthy. Ian, great stuff as always. Look forward to reading your latest on Sportsnet.ca, and we'll chat with you on Sunday when the Canucks host the Tampa Bay Lightning, a 1 p.m. start, a matinee game here at Rogers Arena.
Okay, I know that you've got back home in the Shaw wardrobe some glitter. I know you've got when you used to go clubbing, I know you've got something shiny, something sparkly.
I might have something shiny, definitely not glitter. I just can't stand glitter.
Oh.
Yeah, it just gets everywhere. It's a mess.
Yeah, it does.
It's an absolute mess.
You find it weeks later.
Yes, and it's like, where did this
even
come from?
On your face, and you've had like 14 showers, and there's still
just stuck everywhere. But that's a different conversation for a different day. Ian, great stuff as always. Appreciate your
time. Where'd you get the glitter from? I'm not speaking from experience either.
No. It's just things you've picked up along the way from people telling
quite
you.
Quite literally. I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. Make sure to read his latest on sportsnet.ca. He's Bick Nizar. Special thanks to Lena and Eddie back at the studio. I'm Seth Yershaw, and all of you for listening and participating. Always a pleasure. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. A 5-2 Canucks win over the Columbus Blue Jackets. We're back at it on Sunday, pregame at noon, on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.